And good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're joining us for the Midday News Wrap today. A little later, we're going to take a look at Mayor Catherine Pugh's plan to curb violence in Baltimore. We're also going to get a preview of the AFRAM Festival, which takes place tomorrow. And I'll talk to Rebecca Hofberger, the founder and director of the American Visionary Art Museum. They opened their doors to Baltimore and to the world 25 years ago. But we begin today with a conversation about North Korea with Senator Ben Cardin, the senior senator from Maryland and the ranking Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We spoke yesterday morning. At that time, President Trump had already talked about the fire and fury of a response to North Korea should they initiate hostilities. This morning, the president tweeted that the U.S. military was, quote, locked and loaded with military solutions should North Korea act unwisely. The president appears to be implying that he's ordered some sort of new military plan for North Korea. Most military observers doubt that American preparedness for a conflict with North Korea is, in fact, substantially different than it's been for some time. Senator Cardin, welcome back to Midday. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Your reaction to the, not just the substance, but the tone of Mr. Trump's remarks about North Korea on Tuesday.
I think the global community looks to the United States for leadership to prevent a conflict with North Korea that could involve nuclear weapons. And the president's comments lead to the international community to wonder whether the United States has a policy that can lead to a successful results in North Korea. So I think the language was not helpful, that we recognize that we have to change the equation. And that involves China having a much tougher stance in regards to North Korea. And the president of the United States' language was not helpful in bringing that about.
China is going to play a very significant role in enforcing the sanctions that the UN imposed last week. What is the incentive, given the current state of rhetoric between North Korea and the United States? What's the incentive for China to be helpful in that regard?
I think ultimately China recognizes that a nuclear North Korea is not in their interest. What they want to do is preserve the communist regime in North Korea. What they want to do is to prevent the reunification of the Korea Peninsula. I think the United States working with China can allow China to be the protector for North Korea without North Korea having a nuclear weapon capacity. So I think there is some common interest that could get everyone together negotiating a successful end to this crisis. But just challenging our military might is not the way to get there.
The president has been incredibly inconsistent with his remarks about North Korea over the past several months. I mean, it was just April, just a few months ago, where he was calling Mr. Kim a pretty smart cookie. This is Un Jong Kim, the leader of North Korea. He said he'd be honored to meet with him. Do you think there's any validity or any advisability to enter into unilateral negotiations just between the United States and North Korea?
Ultimately, you need to rely on diplomacy to end this crisis. That's the best way. A military option is very, very risky and unlikely to produce long-term success. So you need to have a dialogue. You need to use diplomacy. However, those discussions should only take place in a framework that can lead to, first, the freezing of North Korea's nuclear program, but ultimately the elimination of that program altogether.
I wonder if there are any paradigms that serve as models in this regard. For example, the Iran nuclear deal, which you cast a very difficult vote against. But, I mean, does the Iran deal serve as a model of something that we could eventually come to an agreement with North Korea?
Well, there are some similarities. Iran only negotiated because the United States leadership brought the international community to bear on Iran, recognizing the government of Iran that the sanctions would virtually paralyze their country if they did not sit down and negotiate. It was that successful international pressure that led to an agreement. The other part, though, that's not similar is that in Iran, there was a military option. It wasn't a good option. It was not an option that would give a permanent solution, but at least there was an option where we could have surgical military action taken. In North Korea, it's much, much more dangerous and less likely to be successful. So, but the key here would then be to use our economic pressure of the international community with U.S. leadership working with China to literally force North Korea to sit down and talk.
Late Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, North Korea said that they're preparing to send some interballistic missiles just 40 or so kilometers off the coast of Guam, where, of course, the United States has a military base. If that happens, then they're threatening that this might happen sometime this month. If that happens, what's our proper response?
Well, clearly, we're going to defend the United States. We're going to defend our territories. We're going to defend Guam. We are going to evaluate anything that North Korea does from the point of view of what we think we're at risk or not. The United States has an incredible capacity to defend ourselves as well as to take military action. That's not the challenge. The challenge is how do we prevent North Korea's going forward with these types of maneuvers and these types of policies that could lead to a nuclear capacity that's unacceptable.
And is it, in fact, completely unacceptable? I mean, is there any scenario in which there is a acceptance of a nuclearized North Korea?
I think understanding the current regime and its unpredictability in North Korea, that's not an acceptable outcome. So I do believe we need to use every effort we can through diplomacy to prevent that from happening. To me, the greatest opportunity is working with China to put additional pressure on North Korea. At least that's what we should be our strategy at this time.
When North Korea looks to presidents like, for example, Gaddafi in Libya, who did accede to give up his nuclear program, and of course we see what happened to Gaddafi, I mean, would Kim Jong-un take a look at that and say, there's just simply no incentive for me to denuclearize our country?
Well, Libya did not have a neighbor and partner such as China that had a nuclear capacity that is fully capable of defending its regime. So I think what North Korea has is that they do have their neighbor China that has a nuclear capacity, that has a military presence that could assure the government of North Korea the continuation of the regime. So I think there's a different set of circumstances. That neighbor also is not interested in North Korea becoming a nuclear weapon state. So I do think there's a common interest with China here that was not present with Libya.
The former rhythm, or the rhythm of the of what happens with North Korea, is that they defy UN sanctions and do testing, both on nuclear testing and ICBM testing, and then somehow that leads to some sort of negotiations. How has that rhythm changed? How is that paradigm that has been in place for, you know, 15, 18 years now different, given the substance and the tone of Mr. Trump's rhetoric as well as the tone of the rhetoric coming out of Pyongyang?
Well, there's no question that the circumstances in North Korea are extremely dangerous. You do have a regime that is trying to become a nuclear weapon state, not only in developing a nuclear weapon, but the delivery system in order to be able to make that a threat against U.S. and our allies. That's a real circumstance that exists, and that's something that certainly we must take action. But the action that needs to be effective. We need to recognize the fact that conventional weapons in that region could cost literally millions of people could be victimized by any type of military action. The North Korean border to South Korea is only about 20 miles from Seoul. There are not only millions of people in Seoul, but there's also U.S. soldiers in Seoul. So there's a risk factor here that is pretty great to the region that needs to be in the calculation as to how we prevent North Korea from becoming a nuclear weapon state.
From your vantage point as the ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, do you agree with Secretary Tillerson's assertion that Americans should sleep well, that the danger of imminent conflict, military conflict with North Korea, is not high? How do you personally assess the threat of war? And do you think that there is a scenario in which there is a non-nuclear military confrontation with North Korea?
Well, two things. First, I have great confidence in the U.S. military and our defense and our ability to protect the defense of our nation. So there is no military that has the capacity that the United States Department of Defense has in all of its arms. So I'm very confident about America's ability to defend our country and to prosecute wherever we need to prosecute. I think we can do that very, very safely. As it relates to the use of conventional weapons, whether a campaign could be limited to conventional weapons, I would certainly hope so. Nuclear weapons should have no place other than as a deterrent in today's global community. And now the last question is, how do I feel that the Trump administration will handle this? I don't know. I'm not confident that they have a strategy to deal with North Korea in a way that can lead to the end of this conflict. So I am not confident at this stage that President Trump has a policy that will lead to a successful conclusion. But I am very confident in our defense, our military, and very confident that we will protect Americans.
Have you or members of your committee over the last few days heard from our allies in places like Japan or South Korea? And are they concerned with the somewhat conflicting statements that we have heard from the Trump administration? We've got Mike Pompeo, head of the CIA, talking about regime change in North Korea recently. And then we've got Secretary of State Tillerson talking about negotiations. And then, of course, we've got the bellicosity of Mr. Trump's own remarks earlier this week. Have you heard from our allies in the region about their concerns?
Over the last several months, I've had numerous conversations with foreign leaders from that region about North Korea. So I've had conversations. Have I had any conversations since President Trump's challenge? No, I have not. I can tell you that when we talk about regime change, we lose the support of China. And China is a key partner to a diplomatic solution in regards to North Korea. I think we all recognize that the Korean people should have an opportunity to come together as a united Korea Peninsula. But I also recognize that if we're trying to deal with the nuclear problems we have today in North Korea, that we need China's help, and therefore regime change must be off the table at this point.
The safety of our allies aside, the safety of people in Seoul, the safety of people in Guam aside, there are people who have a concern that Kim Jong-un is unhinged, that he's not stable, that he is unpredictable and perhaps maliciously unpredictable. And frankly, there are people around the world who perhaps share the same opinion of the President of the United States. Do you worry about some people's concern that our concern for the citizens of North Korea may be greater than Kim Jong-un's concern for his own people in terms of if we were to enter into a military conflict?
Well, there's no question that the leadership in North Korea has had little concern about the welfare of its own people. That is clear. The human rights violations in that country are some of the worst in the world. The way that the economy is being run very much affects the great masses and their ability to deal with basic essentials. So there is no question there is a challenge to the people of North Korea. But recognize that this regime has found a way to stay in power, is not suicidal, that, yes, they want to preserve the regime, but they've been able to do it in a way that they've been able to stay in power. So it's not an administration that is doing things that are against its own survival, but what they have done is clearly against international norms. So I think there is a way to work out a diplomatic solution here. It's not going to be easy, but it does require the President of the United States to have an open, transparent policy in which the global community supports so that we can get cooperation from countries that don't always agree with us, such as China.
Senator Ben Cardin, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure. Good talking with you.
Senator Ben Cardin is the ranking Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We spoke yesterday. Coming up on the Midday News Wrap, a couple of days ago, Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh released her plan for curbing the spike in violence in our city. After a break, I'm joined by WIPR's Dominique Maria Bonesi and Edward Jackson, a former Baltimore City Police Department colonel and currently professor of criminal justice at Baltimore City Community College. We'll take a look at the mayor's plan and compare it to the plan put forth by the City Council's Public Service Committee. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.